Good morning, and welcome to Morning Drive here on this Wednesday morning. Bob Heck here with you, and we are pre-recording today, so no terrible forecast to play. You can just look at your phone and see all this stupid snow we have coming. Just a couple of inches a day for like the next few days. And then Saturday, it's going to be awesome. So, yeah, you can do the weather on your own time today. We have a special guest with us here today. We've got Ryan Smith from the Springfield Thunderbirds. He's the play-by-play guy there. Ryan, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, Bob, thanks for having me.
So how long have you been with the Thunderbirds?
I got in here on the ground level with everybody else. So my first day here was first week of August 2016 before we had ever before we had ever dropped the puck on a game here. So it was actually my second experience being with a brand new organization. So I've had a chance to kind of see what goes in to really starting from square one. And in this case, it was at least a little bit different from my prior stop, which was a true startup experience. Hockey had at least been here for, as one knows, upwards of next year will actually be year 100 of hockey here in Springfield. So a big tradition here already, but there were certainly things that we wanted to improve upon from the prior organization. And so, and the very Reader's Digest version is that over the course of 10 years, we've been able to grow it to exponential heights, and we have no plans of that slowing down anytime soon.
So you were there from the ground floor. For those of you who aren't aware, this is the 10th year of Springfield Thunderbirds hockey here. So you were here from the very beginning.
From day one. So I've grown some grays over the course of 10 years and put on a couple of LBs in that time frame. But it's been one heck of a ride. I'm a Northeast guy through and through, so I love and have a great appreciation for the passion for this sport that there is up here, and it's been nothing but a pleasure to be part of this ride. And the people, our fan base is among the most loyal, dedicated people that I've ever seen. So it's been so cool to kind of at times be able to sit down and reflect back on what's been a crazy journey to this point.
And we'll talk more about you and the Thunderbirds in just a little bit, but I just sort of want to sidetrack a little bit because I was reading your bio at springfieldthunderbirds.com, and you're a big fan of the movie Miracle. The one thing you wish you went back to was could go back to was the Miracle on Ice game back in 1980. What are your thoughts about what transpired on Sunday morning?
Well, that was its own kind of miracle, and obviously a much more micro scale, but I watched that game start to finish as anyone would expect me to. And in terms of the sheer level of competition that was being faced, I'm not sure I've ever seen a better goaltending game than what Connor Hellebuck did on Sunday. I have a hard time believing that there could possibly be a more clutch goaltending performance to be peppered the entire game, survive a 90-second 5-on-3, survive so many close calls, make another worldly save in a tie game in the third period, stop a breakaway in a tie game in the third period. I mean, if Connor Hellebuck could have received 3 gold medals in exchange for the one that he got, I think he deserved 3 times the number of them. And I think they, if I'm not mistaken, I think they gave Connor McDavid tournament MVP, which I think is an absolute sham considering what Hellebuck did in the entire tournament for the Americans. But it was, again, not to the degree of what 1980 was, but I think it showed the whole hockey world that, hey, the U.S. isn't just one step behind Canada. They are even with Canada in terms of producing otherworldly talented superstar players, franchise changers. And I think this is going to hopefully have a trickle-down effect that we'll feel 15, 20 years down the road.
Yeah, and that's what they had said was, that 1980 team got a lot of kids into hockey and sort of started that explosion of U.S. hockey talent. And, hopefully this team kind of keeps that going.
Yeah, and I think the way that my prior stop before being in pro was in the USHL. So when I was in the USHL, one of the opponents we played was the U.S. National Team Development Program. So they have their under-17 team and their under-18 team that plays a USHL Tier 1 junior hockey schedule. And my 2 seasons there, I believe 5 or 6 of the U.S. gold medalists were part of the NCDP in my 2 years in the USHL. I saw Austin Matthews, Matthew Tkachuk, Charlie McAvoy, Kyle Connor, Clayton Keller, Brady Tkachuk. I saw all those guys when they were 17, 18 years old, and you could see in all of them from that young of an age that there was going to be a really, really strong flock coming up from the United States program. And they continue to, it feels like year after year, they're churning out first round talents left and right. And not all of them are going to pan out. But when you have so many guys who are on that trajectory, you're going to have young players who end up turning into that next wave of stars. So I saw it firsthand in the 10 years since those guys were teenagers at the program. And I'm excited for what the future of that program holds for the States. And I think it just makes the game that much better and that much more competitive to have the U.S. and Canada be on kind of an equal playing field. And this is not to discredit all the great European talent we see in Sweden and Finland and the Russian contingency. And there's so many different places where talent comes from. And I think when you look at each of these different nations' players, there's kind of things that make a player from a certain region different from the others. There's different ways that they approach learning the game and different things that they fixate on from a young age. So it's really interesting to see all the different styles of player and all the different paths that they take to ultimately try to reach the same end game goal, which is play in the NHL, play in the Olympics, win cups, and win gold medals.
And you talk about that, and we'll sort of jump from one end of that to the other, you know, seeing all those kids that were on the U.S. team, you know, from the very beginning. Now, in your position as play-by-play guy for the Springfield Thunderbirds, and for those that aren't aware, the Thunderbirds are the AHL affiliate for the St. Louis Blues. Another guy who sort of broke out at the Olympics, Dalibor Dvorsky, who's in the up with the Blues now, spent a lot of time with Springfield last year. Got to see him a few times. Just an absolute pleasure to watch. How cool is it to be able to see guys from that perspective?
I'll tell you what, I tell people a lot that one of my favorite parts of my job is not only getting to watch these guys build their hockey careers out, but to actually kind of get to know them on a more personal level. So this was my first time watching an Olympic Games where I legitimately knew and was friendly with an athlete over there actually skating in the Olympics, which is a pretty cool thing when you sit down and think about it. And I had no doubt in my mind that Dalibor was going to elevate his game, because that's the way he's always been wired. He shows up in big moments at the World Junior Championships for Slovakia. He was always a player that they relied upon for scoring, and he always delivered. And here he was, 20 years of age, just turned 20 last June, and ends up getting the most points by an NHL rookie in an Olympics, breaking a record held by Alex Ovechkin. So that's something that he can take with him for the rest of his life.
Yeah, that's not bad company.
Tell his kids and grandkids about it someday. And I was real bummed for them that they couldn't take home the bronze. I thought they were really one of the great stories of that entire tournament. And what Slovakia did, maybe not to the level of what the U.S. and Canada's accomplishments do to young players in their respective countries. I think a lot of young Slovak kids watching that tournament saw the exploits of Dvorsky and Juraj Slefkovský and Simone Nemec, and they see that and they say, hey, that could be us too at some point. And it's not like Slovakia hasn't churned out Hall of Fame level talents. I mean, Marian Hossa, Zdeno Chara, Marian Gaborik, there have been a number of them. So it's really cool to kind of see it from that personal angle of it all. And I hope that this is just the first of many Olympics from here to the rest of my days in this sport, being able to see guys who I've had the pleasure of getting to know and see what their work ethic is day in and day out, get a chance to be recognized on a worldwide stage.
Now, Ryan, you're not a Massachusetts guy.
I'm not.
Where did you come from, and where did you get your start? How did you catch the bug?
Yeah, so, okay, let's see if I can make this the Reader's Digest version here.
We've still got about 45 minutes.
Yeah. So I grew up about 30 miles north of Philadelphia. So born and raised Philadelphia sports fan, still a diehard Eagles and Phillies fan to this day, to the end of time. When you start working in pro hockey, your allegiances just kind of change from how busy you are on a day-to-day basis. So I'm obviously not a diehard Flyers guy anymore, but that's where my start with the game was going to games in Philly. And when I was 12 or 13 was when the first full season lockout happened. And coming out of that lockout, I remember sitting at my vacation house and seeing that the Flyers had signed Peter Forsberg. And for whatever reason, I'd always been a hockey fan to that point. But when they made that announcement that they signed Forsberg, who had been one of the great international players of a generation for Sweden, scored an Olympic winning goal that went on a postage stamp in Sweden back in the day. For some reason, him signing in Philly just kind of got the bug, kind of put the bug in me for hockey. And I was in cannonball, head first, feet first, whatever you want to call it, from that point forward. And I don't think I missed a Flyers game from then until I was in college. So I really took to the game from that point on. And I don't know, I think unlike any other sport, I think there's just such a tipping point where at any moment in a game, it's not like in football where one team has the ball, mm-hmm. or in baseball where one team is at the plate. Something can change in the blink of an eye that excites the crowd. It can be a gut-wrenching moment. It can be a spine-tingling moment. I just love how quickly emotions can change and how much adrenaline, euphoria that there can be over the course of a hockey game. And I think that's what really drew me to it from that point on. So it was at that point, again, I'm probably middle school, early high school, that's when I kind of knew I had a feeling I wanted to do something in sports casting at some point in my life, because from the time I could talk, I was only really ever interested in having sports on the TV. I wasn't into cartoons or anything else like that. I wanted to have sports on the TV. I played nothing but sports video games. So I think it was at that point that I kind of knew. And then when the hockey bug hit me around middle school, high school, I think I had that epiphany that I think this is the route I want to go. I went to Penn State for my undergrad, and both my parents had gone there. There's a big family history in my family. I think I had like 7 or 8 relatives that had gone there. And I spent years in my childhood saying to my mom, I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to be a Penn State guy like you guys. And then I visited and met with a couple of the students in the broadcast sector at the time. And I was hooked and got there and started calling club hockey games right from my freshman year. So got a chance to really get in right away in my time as a student. And in the summer before my, I guess that would have been summer before my senior year, they announced that they would be going D1. Effective my senior year, they played 1 year of Division I as an independent at their old community rink in State College, Greenberg Ice Pavilion, a place that kind of, honestly, it probably makes the Olympia look like a world-class luxury amenity facility, but there was just something about that place that felt like home, and I got to really hone my skills as a broadcaster and as an interviewer there, and knew from that point that this was definitely still the path I wanted to be on. To make a long story short, after I graduated, I had an opportunity come my way with the Madison Capitals in the USHL, as I mentioned earlier, Tier 1 Junior League, which is, again, the feeder league. At the time, it was the feeder league mostly for D1 college hockey players who play that age 16, 17, 18-year-old season there before making the leap to the college game. So I got a chance to see a number of guys who went on to be national champions and went on to very successful college careers, pro careers, some of them still even playing to this day. So got to spend 2 seasons there, got to learn a lot of the ins and outs of what makes a hockey business operate. And just by being present, I picked up on so many different things from a marketing and a operational perspective that really allowed me to grow an appreciation for all the different arms that go into making an organization run successfully. I saw a lot of the good, and I saw a lot of the bad and the ugly too. Mm. So it was an eye-opening experience for me, and it's something that when I look back on it now, even though there were stressful days, I think it was a very worthwhile endeavor. And I think it really set me up to be ready to take on a pro role just basically 4 years out of college. And now here I am 10 years deep, and I've been in Springfield longer than I was in college and Madison combined. So it's amazing to blink and see a decade of your life go like that. But wouldn't trade much of my experience for anything at this point.
Any guys out there that have sort of influenced you in your style, or just any play-by-play guys that made you think, yeah, I kind of like what he's doing? And if you want to talk about people who suck too, you could do that.
Yeah, I think I know better than to.
Yeah, I know you do.
In terms of my influences and my mentors and guys like that, growing up in Philly, I got to grow up listening to Harry Callis call baseball, and I always appreciated that. I never got the opportunity to meet him. He passed when I was a senior in high school, so I didn't quite get that opportunity. But I grew up watching some very, very subpar Phillies teams. But he was, he was the soundtrack to summers in Philly and down the shore in South Jersey, where everyone goes on their beach vacations. So that was a real soundtrack guy for me. And then on the hockey side of things, two guys really come to mind at the top of everything for me, and that's Jim Jackson, who's been TV play-by-play guy for the Flyers for, I think, now 30, 32 years. He's been a mentor for me since I was literally in middle school. I've kept in touch with him since I was probably 12, 13 years old, and he's been such a huge...
Oh, wow, that's awesome.
He's been such a huge sounding board and resource for me throughout my career, and he's always keeping his eyes open for me, and I try my best to stay in touch with him over the course of the year. So I think my calls subliminally have a lot of Jim Jacksonisms just in my call, just from the 15 or so years I spent growing up listening to him call Flyer games. So he's an influence, and Doc Emmerich is the other one.
Yes,
and
I love Doc.
I grew up listening to Doc from basically the earliest times I have watching hockey, and Doc's zest and energy and passion for the game is what really shined through to me. I've always been of the mindset that I know there are some guys who like to keep a more composed flat line. I don't want to say monotone, but kind of keep a more flat line approach to how they call a game. Whereas Doc was peak and valley. And depending on what's going on in the game, you have your crescendos and you have your time to let things breathe. And I think I took a lot more from that. I've always been of the opinion, if this game can't excite you and elicit emotion out of you as you're viewing it, as you're calling it, I think you're in the wrong sport at that point. So I'd say those two guys especially were huge influences for me. I did get the opportunity to meet Doc when I was shadowing Jim at a game in Philadelphia many years back. So couldn't have been kinder to 16, 17-year-old me, and kept in touch with him via email and via telephone for a number of years. And I've even gotten a chance to have Doc do voiceovers for a couple of videos that we've done here for the T-Birds over the course of time. So that's been a really cool relationship to kind of build on. And again, just have someone to listen back to my stuff and give me pointers and give me any little tiny things that I can take and try to elevate myself, because I think like any great athlete, I think any great broadcaster is constantly on the self-evaluation train, and where can I be a little bit better here? How can I get a little crisper in how I deliver this? So it's a constant balancing act of not wanting to pump up your ego too much, but also not bring yourself down too much. And so that's kind of the way I try to view things, just kind of try to stay in the moment from one game to the next. And I think the COVID pandemic and being away from the sport for a year and a half certainly elevated my appreciation level, and really made me more attentive to not taking the day-to-day for granted, because it's there's no guarantees in this world. And I know that at the end of any given year, if the T-Birds think there's a new direction that they want to go in terms of a voice, I know that they can make that decision at any time. And so it's not to say I don't feel like I'm looking over my shoulder by any stretch, but at the same time, I'm trying to hold myself to that standard of not resting on any laurels.
Yeah, I do play-by-play, too, at the high school level here in Pittsfield. And we got a game tonight, PHS. Cheap plug, hold on one second. PHS taking on Medway.
Love
That's a 6 p.m. start. It's on ETV 1302, PCTV Select 2, and our YouTube channel. You can watch the games there as Pittsfield High plays their preliminary game against Medway. And I was going to go somewhere. I had a great thought. And then I did my cheap plug, and now I forgot. what do you think about hockey broadcasting in general? I mean, for me, I personally feel, and maybe I was just spoiled with Doc because he was so good. The drop off from Doc to where we're at now. Some people. I'm not going to try and not put you in an uncomfortable spot. I mean, some people like Kenny Albert. I personally don't. When Doc calls a game, like, it feels like a big game. And when Kenny Albert calls a game, it doesn't feel like, you know, he's like the fourth guy, fourth man up on the Fox broadcast on the NFL. You just don't feel like he has that big game feel. How do you answer that without saying something stupid? Because I didn't ask a very good question there.
No, and I think the important thing for everyone to understand, and broadcasters obviously understand this, is that it's such a subjective business, and what one person enjoys isn't going to be what another audience member enjoys. So that's natural to have your kind of difference in opinion. I've had a chance to communicate with Kenny a bit over the years, not quite to the extent of Jim or Doc or anybody like that. But the one thing I will say about Kenny is there is not a harder working individual in the business for all the different things he covers on a day-to-day basis. I got a chance to read his book, and I think over the course of a 365-day year, there's probably around 250 days that he's either calling something or traveling to an event that he's going to be calling. And to be the one guy who has called all four major sports on a national level in the postseason is just an insane thing to think about. And he's done all that, and he's handled himself with so much class over the course of time, having to come up in the shadow of his father, who is another legend and giant in the industry. And I know he probably has had to deal with people saying you're the product of being the son of a legend and things handed to you. And I don't think it could be anything further from the truth with him, with how much he puts into everything that he does. And again, going back to what I said about different guys of different styles, he tries to, as a neutral observer, try to keep a more flatline approach. And for some people, that's more palatable for them and how they want to view a game. So again, it's also very subjective. And I think right now, I think there's a pretty, in the sport of hockey especially, I think there's a pretty darn good mix of guys who have been mainstays and who are legends in their respective markets, and young up-and-coming guys who are kind of making a name for themselves and becoming that next wave of phenomenal talent. I look at what the New York Islanders have with Brendan Burke on the TV side and a good friend of mine in the industry, Alan Fearing, on the radio side. They've both taken on similar paths from minor pro. I had the pleasure of sharing a booth with Alan in the American League for the last 9 years. He was in Bridgeport, I was in Springfield, so we saw each other a ton over the course of time. We get together a couple times during the summer each year and just kind of talk shop on the league and what we're seeing. And I think it's been a really cool growing experience for us to kind of be a sounding board for one another and talk through our good days and our bad ones. And I'm excited for what the future of the industry holds, and I hope that pro teams understand the importance of still having dedicated guys within the team on a day-in and day-out basis. I think it provides the listener and it provides the viewer with insights that you wouldn't get if you were just turning the games over to a national or a regional outlet. So I think there's a lot to gain from that, and I think there's so much that can go into making the game a really enjoyable viewing and listening experience for everybody, whether you're a diehard fan or someone who's flipping on a game for the first time in your life.
And we've seen a troubling trend in the sports industry in general, as far as announcers go. There are some teams that don't send their play-by-play guys on the road. Do you travel with the team?
I do. And there are There are some teams in the American League that do not travel their broadcaster on the road, which I'm very fortunate that our organization sees the importance and the service to our fans to have somebody in each building over the course of the season and kind of be that firsthand eyes and ears for the fan base. I think it does a tremendous disservice to a fan base to not send your guy on the road. And I think you're missing out on a chance to kind of see and hear some great storylines that you might not otherwise have a chance to get if you're pigeonholing yourself to just home broadcasts or certain teams who probably wish they could scale back to none at all. And I don't think that serves anybody really well over the course of time, but different managers, different owners have different views on it. And that's ultimately just the reality of sports landscape.
And how does the travel work at the AHL level? I mean, I'm sure you're not getting chartered flights or anything like that. And a lot of the games are local anyways, like within a few hours. So I'm sure you're on the bus.
Yeah, we here in Springfield, we're really lucky. I think we have the most palatable footprint geographically. Mm-hmm. If you think of our three most common opponents, Providence, hour and a half away, Bridgeport, hour 15, Hartford, 35 minutes down, 91. So those are our three most common opponents. They're all day trips. So you're there, you're home, you're sleeping in your own bed at a reasonable hour each and every night of those games. So that's a far cry from what some teams in the Western Conference have to deal with. For example, the Dallas Stars affiliate in Austin, Texas, they fly commercial to literally every road destination that they have. So you're talking about for every road game you have, you're flying out a day or two early, depending on how far it is. You're in a hotel for X number of nights. Then you're playing the game. Then you're staying there that night after the game. And then you're flying home. Whereas we, over the course of a month's time, we're probably in our own beds probably 20, 25 out of 30 nights on average and get a chance to have practice in our own building. Guys can get more dedicated development time with their coaches and with the player development staff. Whereas those other teams, you're scrambling logistically to find practice ice on the road. It might not be in the venue where you're playing your next game. You might have to find a venue in that community. Not to mention the travel. There are some long flights across time zones in those divisions. And there's just so much that goes into it. We have a couple of veteran players who were part of those other divisions over the course of time. And I know one of them has said to me specifically, I couldn't do another year in the Pacific Division. The travel, having a young one at home and a wife at home, was just way too much to deal with all of that. You're exhausted from all the travel, and then you get home, and then you're on daddy duty. So I think there's so many little things that go on behind the scenes. And look, is the bus the most glamorous way to travel? No, it's not. But at the same time, our longest bus trip of the whole year is the one or two times all season we go to Canada, about six and a half hours. And you do that just one time, you deal with it, and then it's done and over with. And I think we have kind of the best, we kind of have the best situation in terms of the travel component of it, where we are able to be home more often than not and get more dedicated practice time, which certainly the coaches and the managerial staffs of those NHL clubs, for the Blues, for the Bruins, for the Islanders, they all greatly appreciate that, because it gives their young prospects a chance to get that really dedicated one-on-one time and really help and further their development.
We have Ryan Smith of the Springfield Thunderbirds, the play-by-play guy there, and we're talking about life in the AHL and a lot of other things. We're going to take a short time out. On the other side of the break, we'll talk about what's coming up with the Springfield Thunderbirds, and we'll talk about how Ryan Smith ended up here on the other side of the break here on WTBR 89.7, WTBR FM Pittsfield 88.1, WSBR in Lee. It's Morning Drive here on a Wednesday morning.
Tune for more Morning Drive here on WTBR FM.
This is Pittsfield Community Radio, 89.7 WTBR FM Pittsfield, 88.1 WSBR Lee.
Support for WTBR comes from Berkshire Community College. Free community college for any Massachusetts resident without a bachelor's degree at BCC. Find out more at berkshirecc.edu. And from Sundrini Awnings and Home Improvement, providing awnings and canopies in Western Mass. retractable awnings, retractable screens, gutter and gutter protection systems, commercial awnings and screen rooms. Customized solutions available. Online at Sandrini.com.
PCTV Select is a great way to watch local content without having a cable subscription. You can keep up with the latest of what's going on in your community from anywhere in the world. And it's available for free right now. Watch live events in full HD on your TV, on your computer, or on the go with your mobile device. Or watch our large library of on-demand video programs anytime that's convenient for you. No more waiting until it's on TV. Did we mention it's free? PCTV Select is everywhere you need to be.
Let's take a moment to talk about your wellness. Financial wellness, that is. Plan your meals out in advance and shop for the week. This will deter you from spending more than you planned.
Pay yourself first. Think of your savings like a bill you pay monthly. This way you can be ready when life happens.
This money hack brought to you by your neighbors at Greylock Federal Credit Union. All financial education and coaching resources are free and open to the public. Greylock Federal Credit Union, insured by NCUA.
Greetings, this is John Pollock, host of The Jazz Train, which comes your way every Saturday night from 10 to 11:30. The Jazz Train generally features music recorded on a particular calendar date in years past and provides relevant commentary and discographical details. So why not join me for a ride on the Jazz Train for a weekly musical adventure? Coming to you on 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio.
Support for WTBR comes from Greylock Federal Credit Union, proud to support high school arts and sports programs to help our community thrive. Greylock Federal, with locations throughout the Berkshires and online at greylock.org.
And from UCP of Western Massachusetts. UCP of Western Mass is hiring full and part-time opportunities to provide a life without limits for people with disabilities. For more information, ucpwma.org/jobs.
You have chosen wisely.
WTBR. And now back to the Morning Drive on WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio.
So Wednesday morning here on Morning Drive. Bob Heck here with you. Our guest today is Ryan Smith of the Springfield Thunderbirds. Once again, Ryan, thank you so much for joining us and taking the time and being a part of this. You mentioned the passion of the fans in Springfield. Talk a little more about that, because over the past... It's really been the past 4 years I've been going to games, and, you know, you got some real nuts out there. And I mean that in a good way.
Yeah, I think every great kind of minor pro organization has that subset of their fan base that just brings the energy, and there's a passion and a pride for their area. And for so many of our fans, this is where they've grown up, and this is where they've made their lives, and this is kind of what they do on weekends. This is their favorite thing outside of their 9-to-5 and outside of their time at home with their families. And it's so cool to be able to come here on a game night, and I can't tell you how many people stop me in the lobby and ask for a little insight on the team or ask me how I'm doing. And we feel so much like a part of their community and a part of their day to day. And they're a huge part of the success that we've had for as long as we've had it, that you need those dedicated people who live, breathe and bleed T-Birds hockey. And I think it's really the lifeblood of any organization, and they bring the energy regardless of whether we're sitting in first place or whether we're sitting at the bottom of the standings. There's just a shared pride for this community, and I always say it to people from other AHL markets who are like, it's Springfield, Mass. There's not really many bells and whistles to the place, and I tell everyone all the time that you wouldn't know it based on the people that live here. They are immensely proud of being from here and being the 413, and we really try to just lean into that with our fans and lean into it with everything that we do, because we are well aware that without them we don't have the success that we have. And so we know that entertaining them and making this a experience that they will tell their kids, their friends, their family members about, it's vitally important for us. And it's something that if there's ever a game day where we're kind of where we're kind of just slogging through the day and we're in the middle of a homestand and a grind, they're a reminder to us that, hey, they're showing up for us. We got to show up for them.
And I tell you, I enjoy going to Thunderbirds games anyways, but there's a little bit more excitement when I get those sweet tickets in the lower level of Section 16, because that is the most fun section in the entire arena. That's where the guy with the hat, with the helmet with the gold light on it.
I'm staring right at 16 from where I'm sitting right now. I'm staring right at it.
That's one of my favorite places in the whole wide world, Section 16 on game day. Because those guys are an absolute blast. I mean, do you get to feel that energy up where you are, high above the...
Without question. When things are going well and we're playing well in this building, and I think back to the Calder Cup Finals run in 2022, it reverberates through this place. It's not the biggest building in the world, 6,800. I think it's the absolute perfect size for the American Hockey League. It's not so, so huge that it's a bandbox, but it's not so, so small that you can't have noise. And there's a relatively low ceiling here. The acoustics in this place are great. So when this place gets loud, it gets real loud, real fast. And I think any broadcaster would tell you, if you have a crowd, whether you're the home or the away guy, if you're in a building where the energy is pumping through your veins, it gives you a little extra juice in the tank, and you don't need a coffee or anything else to get yourself going over the course of a game. So for me it's really subliminal, but I feel it coursing through me when we got a packed Saturday night in the second half of the season and there's playoff implications on the line. So it's just tremendous.
Now, in the AHL, I'm sure you are doing more than just, rolling in, doing the play-by-play and heading home. What else is within your job?
Yeah, so I'll apologize because the Zamboni is going to be getting out here on the ice.
Yeah, that's all right.
I might have to project a little bit, which it may stun you to know I have the ability to project.
Yes.
But the day-to-day here, it's never dull. So, obviously, the game day is what I live and breathe. That's the number one passion of the job for me. But I wear so many different hats. I'm involved with our players in the community going to youth hockey practices and corporate partner visits and charitable events. So I'm in charge of all of that with our players. Myself and a couple of our staff members are involved with getting our mascot Boomer out to so many different things, both in season and in the off season. So even when we are not playing, I'd say over the course of the off season, over that 5-6 month period, we're probably making on average around an appearance or two a day somewhere in the community, whether it's here directly in Springfield or in the border towns and cities in this region. There's so many great organizations doing so much great work that we love to amplify in this area with our mascot and with our players that we're heavily, heavily involved in all that. Also through our charitable foundation, I'm handling a lot of things that we're doing from a marketing and a web development standpoint over the course of time. I'm kind of the gatekeeper of our website and putting the puzzle pieces together, taking the artwork that our amazing creative staff does and putting that in all the right places. They're the creatives. I am just simply the copy editor and the puzzle placer, if you will, so to speak. So I'm the voiceover guy for commercials on TV and advertising. I'm the go-between for all of our marketing sponsors from radio, TV, print publications, and all of that. So there's so many different things that go into a day-to-day basis, things that are both exciting and that are mundane just the same. So there's very few days over the course of the year that aren't taken up by something going on within the organization on one of those levels. So it keeps me busy. I'll put it that way.
So you're here in Springfield full time. It's not like after the season you're heading back down to Philly. You're here full time.
I am. I've been here full time since August of 2016 with that little blip where I went and stayed back in Philly and then spent some time with my wife in the Midwest where she's from. So other than that kind of 15-18 month window, I've been here for the better part of a decade. And I tell a lot of people this, that unless the NHL comes calling, I I can't foresee myself moving laterally with how well this organization has treated me from ownership on down to our president, Nate Costa. And I feel so much like a part of this and so much like a key piece of all this. And we feel so appreciated in all the hard work that we do. It doesn't go unnoticed. And that's a huge morale booster for us. And I think I'm hopefully putting myself in a stage where there can be a leapfrog to the National Hockey League, just the same way that players, coaches, and front office staff try to make that leap to the top level. But in the meantime, I couldn't be happier with the situation I'm in and couldn't feel better about the way I'm treated and the way that I've been accepted into this community.
And 100%, I go to a lot of places, a lot of ballparks and things like that. I think the best presentation is the Springfield Thunderbirds, just start to finish. I mean, the opening video to everything across the board. I just think the Thunderbirds just do it top notch.
Yeah, I see so much of the work that those folks in our office put in. Our game operations director, Luke Pavlock, has been here from day one as well. He was in here for the Falcons era at the end as well. So he's had a chance from the start to really allow his ideas to shine through. And you talk about brainchild ideas, man. I think on the face of the planet, Isotopes Night, he gets all the credit for Isotopes Night. It was his brainchild from the very beginning, and he was asking our managerial staff for years, how can we make Springfield Isotopes Night a thing? How can we make this something that knocks people's socks off? And year after year after year, he hits it out of the park. And this year, by far, the best merchandise run that we've had of products that he and our creative team designed, the skits that he puts on, the fact that we happen to have a player named Skinner and a player named Burns couldn't have lined up any better for this year's installment of it. And there's so many things behind the scenes that he and his crew of, there's just three of them, but the things that those three come up with are just incredible. And it's not something that just magically comes to life when people come to games and they see that. That's not something that came to life week of. That's something that was months, sometimes even years in the offing. So it's really cool to get to see their hard work get so much recognition and appreciation, because it wouldn't happen without them. And it's their skill set is so far above my line of expertise that I'm constantly marveling and blown away by what they are able to pull off.
And I missed the game this year. I try to get to, at the very least, the Isotopes game. I usually get one of the winter packages and try to get to as many as I can. I just wish I lived closer to Springfield. Otherwise, I'd go more. But you could see trending on the national level that Hunter Skinner doing the steamed hams bit from The Simpsons sort of went viral from some national resources. And I laughed my butt off. It was hilarious.
Yeah, and again, all the credit on that goes to Luke and his team to have that recognition that, hey, this is something really unique to us and unique to our market. And thankfully, over the course of time, Mike Scully is a Western Mass guy, one of the head writers for the show, and he's gotten wind of the things we're doing, and he is a complete supporter of what we've been able to put together. And it's been so cool to see that night take on a life of its own. And our fans just continue to get behind it, because six times now we've done Isotopes Nights with Isotopes jerseys, and six times we've won. So I think everybody's just wishing, can we just be the Isotopes every night from now on? Maybe that's the solution. Maybe that's how we go and win a cup.
See, you talk about how close you are. You work with the players and the close relationships you have with the players. How tough is a week like this for you when we just get the news? I don't know if it came out yesterday or earlier today, that Matt Luff was traded. And he was a real big part of the organization this year. I believe he was their only All-Star. When a guy like that leaves, and other trades as well, and you know, other people who depart the organization, how rough is that? And were you, do you keep in touch with a lot of the guys that leave the organization, or how does that all work?
Yeah, it froze on me a little bit there, but I think you're asking about kind of the day-to-day of dealing with roster moves and transactions and things of that nature. Unfortunately, that's part of the business.
Yeah, of course.
It's obviously something that we don't have control over. And ultimately, at the end of the day, the St. Louis Blues have an obligation to put the best team on the ice at the NHL level and put their prospects in the AHL level in the best position to succeed. And sometimes moves like this happen, and we don't expect fans to agree and be thrilled with every single thing that happens. But what the way we kind of position ourselves to them is ultimately St. Louis and the hockey operations staff. They ultimately have the control of those things. We control what we can from the experience and the entertainment standpoint. We obviously love every opportunity we get to kind of highlight these guys and kind of allow our fans a chance to get a peek behind the curtain of someone who really came here early last season after he hadn't been signed anywhere, and he needed a launch off point to kind of get his career back where he thought he belonged. And he spent a lot of time in the National Hockey League previously, and he put together a year and a half of just phenomenal hockey here with us. And in the community, he's one of the biggest dog lovers on the planet, and I think a lot of people really appreciated that and got behind all the support that he had for the TJO Foundation here locally. And he's not the only one who has a really heartfelt appreciation for community matters. And I have no doubt that the folks in Bridgeport and New York are going to absolutely love him for the energy he brings to the rink and the energy and the passion that he has for his interests outside of the game. And ultimately, that's the unfortunate reality of sports, is that there's a business component to who your personnel group is. And it's not always the easiest thing to navigate, but at the same time, it's a chance for our fan base to kind of get a chance to learn about Julien Gauthier, who's had an interesting career journey himself and has spent a lot of time at the National Hockey League level. And it's a chance for us to get peel the curtain back on somebody new and someone else who, a lot like Matt Luff, is trying to get his career back to the NHL level. He's a former first pick, and I think there's a lot to be excited about. Teams in a, for lack of a better term, coping period of a favorite player going to a different place. But at the end of every season, you lose a handful of your favorites by free agency, mm-hmm. by players going for international opportunities. So it's part of the hockey landscape that we are part of, and it's something where there's going to be constant turnover. But with each bit of turnover, there's someone new and a great new story to unearth, and I think it'll be another situation where in due time we'll have a new throng of players and a new throng of prospects that get the people excited about what their NHL futures look like and what the future for teams here in Springfield will look like.
Talking with Ryan Smith, works for the Springfield Thunderbirds, main play-by-play guy. If you have Flow Sports, you can check them out there. I get to watch a lot of the games there on Flow Sports when I don't get to make it. What's your favorite promotion that the Springfield Thunderbirds do?
Oh, man. Oh, that's tough.
It is tough because they do a lot of really good ones.
Yeah. Obviously, I mentioned Topes already. That's always a really fun night each year. But for me, I don't know. That's tough. I think there's two for me that really stick out, and they're both community driven and community oriented. From the time I got into the sport, I've always loved what all the organizations do around Christmas time with the teddy bear toss. And there's something so unique and cool about a bunch of stuffed animals being thrown onto the ice in unison and players getting a chance to shovel them up and celebrate and jump into them and have fun with it. And then for us to have the chance the following week to deliver those gifts to underprivileged children in this area, who I think so many of us take for granted the things that we have day to day. I know I'm guilty of it from time to time. And to see what the impact of just handing a gift over to a child at that time of year and the smiles that it elicits, regardless of whether we won 8-0 or if we lost 5-1, there's that appreciation from young people and that innocence of youth that is really powerful. And it's a day I look forward to every year, from not only the celebration and the throwing of the bears here, but what we do in the community. And then the other one is a little over a week away, and it's Pink in the Rink. We paint the ice pink. We have, I think this year it's going to be around 120 breast cancer survivors on the ice in a circle before the game begins. And our players and the opponent are lined up with them hand in hand and having a chance to show our appreciation for their strength and their courage. It's one of the game nights every year where I tell everyone on the air, the 120 women that are circled up with our players have been through so many more battles than any professional hockey player has been through at this stage in their life, fighting for their families, fighting for their friends, and refusing to let a crippling diagnosis affect who they are. And so many of them have powered through to the other side. And it's something that it's a nice reminder and a perspective for us to get every single year. And of course, it doesn't take a day off with cancer. Mm-hmm. Everyone's had an impact in their family with it at some point in their life. And to see what this community does to rally around those women and what our organization does to raise money for the Rays of Hope for all the great work that they do 365 days a year for research and awareness. It's a night that allows you to sit back and understand that there are things way more consequential than what we're doing in a hockey and an entertainment business on a day-to-day basis. And those are the two that when I think about promotions that are bucket list for me every year, I think those two.
Yeah, I try and
generally speaking.
Yeah, every year I try to get to the Teddy Bear Toss game because that's always one of my favorites. It's such a great time. And the Pink in the Rink is, you're right, that's just a very good opportunity to sort of reset and be like, you know, if you're not affected by it, you're like, you know, I have it pretty good, and sort of appreciate what you have, as well as acknowledge the struggle that these women have gone through to beat such a disease.
Yeah, and I think ultimately that's really what we're all about as an organization. We pride ourselves on trying to make our game experience something beautiful, and the people who are serving this area and have the chance to shine the spotlight on them. I think it's really easy for fans to feel that appreciation and want to be part of something bigger than themselves.
Ryan Smith from the Springfield Thunderbirds. We got a couple of minutes left. We talked about travel earlier. What's your favorite place to travel to?
Favorite place to travel? I think it mostly depends on the time of year. Mm-hmm. In the summers, I am 100% the Jersey Shore, South Jersey Shore, I should add. I grew up going down there, Ocean City, New Jersey. It's a couple of islands over from Atlantic City. I've been going there since I was a baby, and summer's not complete for me without a week down there with my family, and it's something that will be a tradition in my family years and years down the line, hopefully many generations deep after this. During the course of hockey season, I love going pretty much anywhere where hockey is, where hockey's prevalent. And when I have a chance to go see one of the Canadian cities, I do it. I spent, I think, 30 hours in Vancouver once, and I'm already counting down the days until I get a chance to go back. My wife and I have had a chance to go travel into Europe a handful of times. We've been to Italy. We've been to Sweden. Copenhagen, Denmark is one of the most underrated places on the planet to go. There's so much cool architecture and history over there. Got a chance to go to Iceland this past summer off season as well. So there's kind of an endless list of places that I still want to check off my list over the course of time. And hopefully someday the National Hockey League comes calling and then I can check off 32 cities just like that in the blink of an eye, just on the work cycle.
There you go. Ryan Smith of the Springfield Thunderbirds, thank you so much for, before we go, promote the two games this weekend, Friday and Saturday. against Charlotte.
Yes. So Friday, we're doing our first ever Dr. Seuss night. The folks over at Dr. Seuss Enterprises and the Springfield Museums, they're sending over the Cat in the Hat thing one and thing two for some appearances and photos on the concourse. And we'll have some other interactions throughout the course of the night for all of that. Kind of a first of its kind thing that we're hoping to grow into something bigger in the years to come. And then Saturday, another one of our great community driven nights, military appreciation. So we'll have veteran and active duty personnel here from all branches of the military, and a chance for all of us to say our thanks and appreciation for all that they do every day to protect our country. And it's another one of those nights that great perspective, great chance to look back and say, hey, what we do day to day is so inconsequential compared to the things they've seen and the things that they have done, all for giving us a better life. So two wonderful nights, 7 o'clock puck drop on Friday, 6 o'clock on Saturday. And again, we're in the heat of a playoff chase. So on top of great promotions and great community driven activity, also some darn good hockey to be excited for.
Looking forward to it. Looking forward to getting back out to the Thunderdome. Ryan Smith from the Springfield Thunderbirds, thank you so much for joining us this morning here on Morning Drive. We really appreciate it.
It was a pleasure, Bob. Thanks so much for having me.
All right. Sean Sayre back in the big chair tomorrow. I'll be back with you next Tuesday or something along those lines. I just look at the calendar and show up when they tell me to show up. Have a great day, everybody. Have a happy Wednesday. And tune in tonight for Pittsfield High taking on Medway in the preliminary round of the MIAA State Tournament. That's on PCTV, ETV 1302, PCTV Select 2, and on the Pittsfield Community Television YouTube page. Have a great day, and we will talk to you tomorrow. Drive where you want.